We haven't got Moses home yet. He's still on his journey. But there again, so are we. We're still on our journey. And we still have things to learn, don't we? We don't know it all. And we are still learning, I trust, things from the life of Moses. We were asking a question just in recent weeks, thinking about provision to the young people, about Moses. What was it like to depend on God's unique provision, how God had provided manna for them, food to eat there in the wilderness when there was no hope of it being provided any other way for such a number of people, the power of God. But even though he was living in a demonstration of God's power and in wonderful days, it didn't mean everything was easy and without its problems. And our last question we asked, or would have asked Moses if we could, was what was it like to get the victory over the flesh? And how the flesh came in the form of the Amalekites, and also there was the flesh within the people that he was dealing with, and how Moses himself, who's a man prone to the flesh, was able to get the victory in each of these situations. So that was interesting, and it was good to be able to learn from that. Today, the question I'd like to pose is this. Moses, what was it like to get a wake-up call from your family? Moses, what was it like to get a wake-up call from your family? I got a wake-up call in the middle of the night. The manse alarm went off. I wasn't looking forward to that one bit. But nevertheless, it happened, and I'm still here. And if I fall asleep in the middle of the sermon, sure, I'll only join the rest of you. But no, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. We will read from Exodus chapter 18. Exodus 18. I know you're really in silent prayer, praying it'll end. Exodus 18 and verse 1. When Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, you'll notice how many times this phrase is used, his father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel's people, and that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took the poor of Moses' wife after he had sent her back, after Moses had sent her back, and her two sons, of which the name of one was Gershom, for he said, I have been an alien in a strange land. And the name of the other was Eliezer, for the God of my father, said he, was mine help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife unto Moses into the wilderness, where he encamped at the Mount of God, so near Sinai. And he said unto Moses, I, thy father-in-law Jethro, am come unto thee, and thy wife and her two sons with her. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and did obeisance, and kissed him, and they asked each other of their welfare, and they came into the tent. And Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how the Lord delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced for all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hands of the Egyptians. And Jethro said, Blessed be the Lord, who hath delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of Pharaoh, who hath delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods, for in the thing wherein they dealt proudly, he was above them. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and Aaron came, and all the elders of Israel, to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. And we'll end our reading for now just there at the end of verse 12. Notice how Moses' father-in-law Jethro, also known as, you know, as Reuel, was, he had heard about God's power on behalf of his people Israel from where he was. And when we eventually get to the scene at Jericho, we'll discover Rahab's the same. She had heard about God's power and all he had done from where she was. And whenever I think about that and think about how this people called by God, privileged by God, with whom God made covenants, they should have been the evangelists for the world in their day, but they failed in that. And that's something we should constantly think about. Are we feeling in our day? They really feel. There were so many opportunities. People were hearing about God and about what God had done. This news was traveling. But there weren't too many going out in the back of that to inform the people and tell them about the God of Israel and about his grace and his mercy and his love. So Jethro hears the good news and decides it's time for him to reunite Moses and Zipporah and the family. By this time they've been apart. Well, it depends on what you believe with regard to where Zipporah was, but most commentators believe that soon after the incident at the inn with the circumcision that Moses sent her back at that point, because we don't read of them in any shape, form or fashion from then until now. So if that is so, then it's been a number of months since they've seen each other. Remember, the last mention of them was in chapter 4. So they'd set out to go to Egypt so that Moses could carry out the will of God in delivering the Israelites. And it was there at that inn that everything seemed to get very serious. It was a very frightening time, an emotional time for Zipporah. We get that whenever we read the passage as we thought about that in those days. We get it from her actions, we get it from her words. And we suggested that it was at that point, she who hadn't been brought up the way Moses had amongst the Hebrews, it was at that point that she really realized who Moses' God was. That she grasped the seriousness of God's call upon Moses' life. Something that would not only affect him, but also her and her sons. And notice that at that time she wasn't condemned for her actions. But perhaps the fact that she hastily responded in circumcising Gershom suggested that she was part of the problem that made Moses compromise on that issue. So we now read of them here in chapter 18. And she and the boys are being brought by her father Jethro to be reunited again with Moses. And I'm sure that was something that came with mixed emotions for Moses. He had been involved so deeply in all that has happened in between. And look at how much happened. Look at how much happened in the space of 1 month, as we discovered. It was intense. And it would have been very easy for him in the midst of all of that to almost forget that he had a family. And now suddenly they reappear on the scene. And I'm sure, like you, would love to ask Moses what that was like. What was it like? Have a wake-up call from your family. You see, he didn't cease to have a family. They didn't just go away. They were still his. And now here they are back on the scene. But as we read through that portion together, you noticed how many times it said Jethro, the father-in-law, and on and on and on it went. And although we know that Zipporah and the boys were there, we don't read one thing that she said or one thing that they did. It's all Jethro and Moses. But remember, Jethro is still his family. He is still his father-in-law. I don't have any in-laws. It's great. From what I hear, they're more like outlaws than in-laws. There are dozens of comedians have got many of their laughs from mother-in-law jokes, haven't they? I was just thinking of one this morning. Do you want to hear it? I'll be telling you a joke on the platform. You can ask me later. But Jethro was very, very, very unlike another father-in-law we read of. Laban. You remember him? He was the father-in-law of Jacob, and he deceived Jacob not only once but time and again, and whenever Jacob wanted to move again and get back to where he came from, Laban made it so hard and and on it went. And it was always his own selfish interest that he had in mind. But when we come to read about Jethro, I have to say, it's only really in studying this that I got a new appreciation for Jethro. That he is so unlike Laban. In the middle of all of these sensational events that have been happening in the life of Moses, Jethro makes this appearance. And here's the wonderful thing. I believe from the reading that Moses was truly glad to see him. We read at the beginning of verse 7, Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and did obeisance and kissed him. Well, the obeisance part was, I suppose, culturally a greeting and an acknowledgement of who his father-in-law was. But he also kissed him. Now, one thing, as I often say to you, is this is how it works for me. I try to visualize these things. I try to imagine this actually happening. And these two men are not an older man and a younger man. Moses is over 80 at this point, so I don't know what age that makes Jethro. But they're two aged men. And they're coming together here. And that's how I picture it. And what also we see there is Moses asked Jethro how he was. Well, that's only partly true. Because at the end of verse 7, we discover they asked each other of their welfare and came into the tent. I like that. Jethro could have just thought, it's Moses' place, he's my son-in-law, he's down there and I'm up here, and it's his duty to ask me how I am. And never think of returning the gesture. But no, they asked each other of their welfare. I like that. Now, in fellowship here today, and whenever you're chatting to people, maybe you've already done that this morning, and you maybe do so as you eventually make your way out after the service. Somebody says to you, how are you? Well, you may go down a whole list of woes, but would you please do something? Remember to ask them how they are as well. Because it would surprise you, out of the many people, and how are you? How few people actually say back, but how are you? They both asked of each other's welfare. This man from outside the 12 tribes, yes, he was a descendant of Abraham by Keturah, but he's not part of the 12 tribes. With his previously limited knowledge of who God is, yet he is rejoicing in the deliverance by God of his people, Israel. And here's what I like about this encounter. We don't find one trace of jealousy from Jethro. Do you know something else we don't see? Not one shred of criticism. No complaining. He might have said, you're way off doing this, and I've had to look after these. No complaining. No chiding. We find Jethro instead rejoicing in the Lord and encouraging the Lord's leader. And the other side of that, of course, is this is all in the midst of a time when from the 12 tribes, what's Moses getting? Nothing but complaining and grumbling and chiding. Do you know, this was just the kind of company Moses needed at that moment in time. Isn't it great when you're going through difficulty and you've somebody who you can relax with, somebody you can share with, somebody who's, when you see them coming through the door, your spirit lifts rather than others who come through the door and your heart sinks. But that's a fact of life, isn't it? And here was a man, I believe, when Moses saw him, his spirits lifted. And he's just what Moses needed at that moment. So there we learn, you never know when that little inquiry about how somebody is, or to be in their their company and not to give them a whole dose of negativity. It could just be the thing they need in the midst of perhaps being surrounded by negativity. And they enter the tent at the end there of verse 7. And Moses gives his testimony to his father-in-law, verse 8. It appears that in all of this, what Jethro heard that brought him to meet Moses, and what Moses is now telling Jethro, that he also is having a milestone experience here in his own life. Because he says there, verse 11, "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods." So he has obviously heard from Moses about Jehovah. He's obviously heard down through the family from Abraham about the Lord. He has been classed as a priest of God. We're not totally sure what that meant. But as a head of a household, that was a right that men had in those days. But here he comes to a deeper understanding. Something happens as he hears Moses' testimony. And he has this great flood of assurance. Now I know. It's as if at that verse, verse 8, a light is switched on in the life of Jethro. Whenever I think about that, it makes me think of the importance of our interaction within our family. We talked about there, Moses, what's it like to get a wake-up call from your family? And sometimes it's in difficulties that families start to talk. I wonder, when it comes to our extended family, our in-laws, or anyone else within the family circle, do they know our testimony? We sometimes think, what am I going to say? And as I encourage the folks in the Bible studies, the commands of Jesus, show what great things the Lord has done for thee. Just tell them how wonderful God is to you, what he has done for you, some incident where there was a moment you were up against it, a dark, dark tunnel in your life, and you're able to say, but the Lord brought me through, or the Lord did this, or the Lord did that. The Lord answered that prayer. The Lord provided that need. And I'm sure Moses was just thrilled and enthused as he talked to his father-in-law about the things of God. It's not easy talking to a father-in-law, talking to a mother-in-law, talking to sometimes even our own parents, if they're not believers. And yet look from this passage at the difference it made in Jethro's life. And it left him rejoicing in the goodness of the Lord. It impacted him. Moses, what's it like to get a wake-up call from your family? Well, it can mean doing things you never thought you'd do and seeing things in them you never thought you would see. Wouldn't we all love to see things in our family we never thought we'd see? And I mean that in a good way. But also Moses is reminded of his responsibility to his family. He rejoices when he sees Jethro rejoicing. But amazingly, Jethro also sees his responsibility to Moses. And we discover that as we read on down the chapter from verse 13. It came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people. And the people stood by Moses from the morning till the evening. That's an important little detail. It's not put in there to fill up space. You think about that. From the morning till the evening. That's a long time. And Moses' father-in-law saw all that Moses did to the people. Or when he saw, he said, "What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone. And all the people stand by thee from morning to even. And Moses said unto his father, no, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come to me, unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, the thing that thou doest is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away, both thou and this people that is with thee, for this thing is too heavy for thee, thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken or listen now unto my voice, I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Jethro's starting to give advice. Why should Moses listen to Jethro? It's a good question. Because some would suggest that although he was a priest of the Lord, he wasn't maybe in the truest sense, the fullest sense, a true priest of the Lord only. The fact that he even makes mention of how now know that you're the God above all other gods, small g, perhaps there was a wee bit of a mixture going on there, as was often the case. It was often the case within Israel as well. So why would Moses listen to Jethro? Well, we believe at that point he has come to a fuller understanding of the one and only and true and almighty God. However, we know that there are many people who are true believers and they believe in sound doctrine. But it doesn't mean to say that I would listen to their counsel. There's something about Jethro that makes Moses listen to him. And it would make me listen to somebody as well. It's not about ticking boxes and saying, oh, I'm down this doctrinal line, therefore. Jethro, you know, had been good to Moses. And what we're going to see here is a picture of integrity. And that's something that will make you listen to me if it's in my life, and me listen to others if it's in their life. And it's something that will put us off other folk if it's not in their life, and certainly would make me not listen to the advice of somebody who wasn't living the life. Moses knew that Jethro had been good to him. Moses was on the run from Egypt. Where does he end up? The land of the Midianites. And through an encounter with the daughters, the seven daughters of Jethro, he ends up being brought to Jethro's tent, and Jethro takes him in. He's a fugitive. He's on the run. He has no friends. He's a stranger in another land. And Jethro takes him in. He was good to Moses. Moses didn't forget that. Moses needed a friend. He needed a job. He needed a roof over his head. Jethro gave him it all. That's the kind of person people listen to. Again, when it seemed the right thing to do, Moses knew he could send the poor and the boys to Jethro. He had confidence in Jethro, that Jethro would be a good protector and provider until this point in the story. And I like the fact that Jethro also knows that his work is done. And he doesn't hold on to the family longer than is necessary for selfish reasons. Because he gave his daughter to Moses to be a wife. And he knew that that time had to come when they would be reunited. And he doesn't hold them back. And when he judges the situation to be safe, he takes the initiative in returning Moses with that little family, those two boys. And he sends word ahead, actually, 18 and 6, that he's coming. So why should Moses listen to Jethro, his father-in-law? Because of Jethro's integrity. Moses knew Jethro better than he knew anybody else around him. He knew Jethro better than he knew Aaron. It was only when he left Jethro, went back into Egypt, that he really got to know Aaron. But he had spent 40 years with Jethro in the backside of the desert. And it was from him that he learned the skill of shepherding. Shepherding that would often involve Moses being alone in the wilderness. And you remember way back at that time, we said there would come a day when these skills would be of vital importance to Moses. That day had come. Moses was now leading the flock of God in the wilderness. And he had learned those skills from who? From Jethro. I hadn't realized the importance of that man really until studying this. Jethro had been part of Moses' masterclass. So what was it like, Moses, to get a wake-up call from your family? Well, I can't help but feel it when Moses saw Jethro and the family again. He must have remembered the shepherd's life. And it probably clicked with him. That's what that was all about. That's what God was doing. That's why I was there. That's why I was alone that day when the bush was burning but not consumed. Why would he listen to Jethro? Well, he had every reason to have confidence in him in the past. Also, it's fresh eye, a fresh pair of eyes on the subject, and there'll be nobody like your family that will put a fresh pair of eyes on your plans and your proposals, which is why half of us never told our parents anything. Because we knew right well they would see through it, or see through the individuals we were thinking of bringing home and all of that. Because it's a fresh pair of eyes, a wiser pair of eyes, a different perspective on everything. Jethro sees things with fresh eyes. Perhaps another reason why I believe that Zipporah and the boys weren't with Moses up until this point, because they could have tipped Jethro off about this, that, and the other thing. That's not what we read here. He heard about God doing wonderful things from where he was, but he hadn't heard about what Moses was bogged down in. He had to see that for himself. Maybe Jethro had hoped that Moses by now would have more time for his family, now that Pharaoh and his armies were dealt with and the people were free. And it's maybe a shock to him when he discovers then the very next day, after they've had their rejoicing, they've had their meal together, they've had the sacrifice, they wake up. And Jethro probably goes, where's he at now? This would be another great day of chatting to my son-in-law. And he goes out the tent door and sees what's going on. Moses kept busy with the problems of this vast society. Verse 21. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, rulers of tens, and let them judge the people at all seasons. It shall be at every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. If thou shalt do this thing, and God command thee so, then thou shalt be able to endure, and all this people shall also go to their place in peace. So Moses listened unto the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. Moses' father-in-law saw what was going on. And he's really asking in verse 14, what are you doing? That's a good question. What was Moses doing? Why was he doing it alone? What should others be doing? And what should he be doing? Jethro's opinion, Moses' daily workload wasn't good. What Moses was doing was good, Jethro wasn't questioning that, but it was the way in which it was done that wasn't good. What Moses was doing wasn't good for him. And that would affect, ultimately, his role in the nation. So what was Moses doing? He was dealing with disputes and problems all day long. Jethro saw that this was unsustainable and impractical, both for Moses and, of course, for the people. He would wear himself out. But apart from that, the people deserved a wee bit more expedient help and justice. And that could never happen if they're going to have to stand in queue all day. But then again, Jethro, with his fresh eyes, sees what Moses should be doing. What should he be doing? He should be representing the people before God, interceding, and then teaching the people God's ways. So praying to God and hearing from God, that's a priority, on behalf of the people. And as well as that, teaching them God's laws. And Moses says that already God was giving him his ordinances. And we've discovered that. That some, not all the laws were given from the next chapter onwards. That God had already started to give them some laws prior to this. Do you know, the apostles made a similar discovery not far into the earliest days of the early church. We read in Acts chapter 6 from verse 1 these words. In those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplied, there arose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews because their widows were neglected in the daily ministration. Then the 12 called the multitude of the disciples unto them and said, it is not reason that we should leave the word of God to serve tables. Wherefore, brethren, look ye out among you 7 men of honest report. There's your integrity. Full of the Holy Ghost. I love that bit. And wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business. But we will give ourselves continually to prayer and the ministry of the word. So what was he doing? And why was he doing it? Why was he doing it alone? And what could others be doing? As for the matters of resolving disputes and sorting out problems, whatever they would be, it wouldn't be hard to have problems if you have that vast number of people and you're living cheek by jowl. I'm sure it was a mess. But Moses was encouraged by Jethro to look out men with qualifications. Number one, men who fear God. And that's so similar to what we read, even about the people waiting on tables in the Acts of the Apostles. Full of the Holy Ghost. Full of faith in the Holy Ghost is a description of Stephen, who was one such man. Men who fear God, and we read in Psalm 111, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. So men of truth. Trustworthy men. Do you remember in Great Expectations we were thinking of the fruit of the Spirit? In Galatians 5, the word faith, which really meant faithfulness, trustworthiness. And there's your integrity. And then the other qualification, men who hate dishonest gain. Do you remember Jesus in the parable in Luke 18 about the unjust judge? And the woman who came to him, but it's very interesting that she's not just described as a woman, she's described as a widow, suggesting that she had no way of bribing the unjust judge, because that's how you worked with unjust judges. So all she could do was to be persistent until he did what she required. And of course, God was saying to the early church, when you're looking for office bearers, they can't be people like that. 1 Timothy 3, 8-10. Likewise, the deacons must be grave, not double-tongued, not given too much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre. That just means getting money in an unjust way, taking bribes, or being people who can be influenced by others who have money. Titus 1 and 7, an elder must be blameless, the steward of God, not self-willed, not so angry, not given to wine, no striker, not given to filthy lucre, again. So away back there, you have a man like Jethro coming out with things which we are still applying today in the life of the fellowship of the people of God. And those people, if they could be found and selected, were to be placed over the nation in various size groups. People over tens, people over fifties, over hundreds, over thousands. So those over 10, that would suggest that, like a family unit. And then over 50s, an extended family unit. And then over hundreds, perhaps a section in the compound where they were encamped. And then over thousands, perhaps over a tribe. And the process would be one of referral. What couldn't be handled within the family unit would then be handled to the next stage and so on, until the very most difficult cases that couldn't be sorted out at the lowest level would be eventually referred to Moses. And I'm sure he was hoping and praying, like the rest of us would, that everything would get sorted out at the lower level and very few would reach him. It makes so much common sense to us today, doesn't it? But here you have the roots of it all those years ago. And this came from Moses getting a wake-up call from his family and from his father-in-law of all people. And Jethro isn't criticizing him. You can see the tenderness here. You can see that he is concerned that Moses wouldn't be worn out. And here's something else. It's one thing to say to somebody, this isn't right. We're all good at that. It's another thing to be able to be constructive and say, but here's how you could make things better. And I like that. Would to the Lord that we had more folk who were like that, rather than just saying, this is not happy with that, and a whole list of things, they come and say, but Pastor, this might be another approach. In verse 18, at the beginning of the verse, thou shalt surely wear away. And we're still talking today, aren't we, about people being worn out. There's your phrase. I like the BBC programme at 4:30. I'm just getting my spuds peeled at that stage. And I feel no guilt then in watching something whenever I'm doing something else. The repair shop. Who likes the repair shop? I just think it's amazing. And there's a guy there, Steve Fletcher, who looks after clocks and watches and all kinds of things. And quite often, whenever it's not going, he'll see that there's a couple of wee teeth that have worn away. I mean, it's been used for maybe a couple of 100 years in some cases. So it's any wonder it's worn away. By the time me and Andrea are a couple of 100 years old, you'll not know us. We'll have worn away. And long before. Overuse. You wear away. And in verse 22 is an interesting little phrase. At the end of the verse, every matter they shall judge, so that it will be easier for thyself. Do you know what that Hebrew word would maybe be better translated? Lighter. Because the meaning of that is to cause to make light. And a picture of that word is offloading cargo from a ship. I think that's lovely. There's Moses with all of this happening, and his father-in-law sees what's happening. He says, you'll just wear out and you'll be no use to anybody. And then he brings in this little word about being easier. It's not that you have a good old time. So much today, and so many staff that there are, paid staff in larger churches, it's by and large that pastors get an easier time. But here we see it's to lighten the load. And listen, the best of us need to be able to offload. The best of us. And it's like taking the load off of cargo off a ship, you know something, that ship would just suddenly be more buoyant. It would go faster. All the positives once the cargo was offloaded. Moses, what was it like to get a wake-up call from your family? Some things sometimes have to be said. And it's for the good of the person. But here's an interesting thing. Moses obviously did. We read that. He listened to Jethro and he did what Jethro said. But it's funny how we might just need one wake-up call from our family. We might need another one down the line, because I'm sure Jethro's maybe long gone by the time we get to Numbers chapter 11. But we find Moses struggling there too. People say from certain groups of assemblies, they look at the Baptists and they say, oh, this is a one-man ministry. Let me tell you this, this is no one-man ministry here. It's not scriptural to have a one-man ministry. Isn't it wonderful that God has put so much gift in this place? And so many departments and so many leaders and so many teachers and so many folk who are gifted, and God has us all working together here. And that's how it should be. But problems can arise. And we read this in Numbers 11 and 11. Moses said to the Lord, wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? Wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I conceived this people? In other words, are they my children? Have I begotten them that thou shouldst say to me, carry them in thy bosom? Verse 14. I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it's too heavy for me. You think Moses would have thought back to Jethro's advice at that point, wouldn't you? And the Lord said unto Moses, gather me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be elders of the people, officers over them. Bring them to the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. And I will come down and talk with thee there. And I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, and will put it upon them. There's your Acts scenario again, men filled with the Spirit. And they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. So what appeared to be in itself an insignificant visit of a relative, it's really a little provision of God. A wake-up call that Moses needed. Do you know what I liked about Jethro's advice in all of this? And it's in verse 23. If thou shalt do this thing, number one, you'll please me, Jethro will be thinking, and I'll be glad that you took my advice and everything will turn out okay. No, that's not what he says. If thou shalt do this thing, and this is a very important and God command thee so. Did you get that? Jethro gave him the wake-up call, gave him constructive criticism, gave him advice, but he still left it to Moses to get it from God. I love that. As I say, Jethro has grown on me. And God command thee so. And here's the wonderful thing. When all of that happens, what do we read about Jethro? He just goes home. He goes back. He leaves Zipporah with Moses. And then he goes home. Job done. How did Moses get himself into that situation? Well, perhaps it stems from the fact that he had been so cruelly criticized. And it was to his face. And it was he, rather than God, although God took it personally, we read that, we discovered that, that God took it as to himself, but they were coming to Moses in the first instance. And could it be that they complained that much and murmured that much that it affected dear Moses to the point that he felt in order to try and please them, he had to be there personally for every last complaint? And how the flock can drive these things to be. And the worrying thing is, the elders let him. But Moses got a wake-up call from fresh eyes, from his family, just when he needed it. May the Lord bless these thoughts to all of our hearts.